Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream. This is a very exciting show. I've been waiting for this for a while because I've got somebody amazing here again, back on the show. And this conversation never gets old. In fact, if anything, it's ever expanding. Curiosity builds, the earth and humanity is changing, and here we are for more wisdom. This is Dare to Dream. This is the go-to podcast for awakened beings ready to explore ET contact, channeling, and the ancient future shamanic path. Today on Dare to Dream, something extraordinary is happening on Earth, a frequency shift unlike anything we've ever seen. Today, Wendy Kennedy, channeler of the ninth dimensional Pleiadians, will be sharing what's really unfolding, how it affects you, and the keys to stepping into your highest potential before the window closes. We'll be chatting, she'll be channeling a little later, and she's got an amazing activation with codes for all of us regarding trust. If you'd like to learn more about Wendy, go to higherfrequencies.net. And with that, I welcome the amazing Wendy Kennedy back to Dare to Dream. So great to have you.
Oh, it's such a joy to be back here. Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I'm curious about this point right now, Wendy, in our evolution. I can feel, see all the changes happening for folks like you, for events rising, for people waking up. What do you think right now is the deeper purpose of humanity's contact with ET intelligences?
Well, I think it really shifts our perspective in terms of, you know, we spend so much time down here fighting each other about what we think is important. And then when you take a step back and you look at the bigger picture and the bigger galactic community that we're a part of, the conversation immediately shifts, priority shifts. And I think also with that expansion and that knowing that we're part of a bigger galactic community, it helps us to open up to our own inner wisdom. You know, some of the information that we have from our ancients about our origins and the stories that have been passed down that are surfacing that we're remembering, we say, oh, this part, I forgot this part. And yes, this really resonates with me. So it helps us to remember our own divine nature when we start expanding our perspective and connecting with ETs.
How do the Pleiadians view time, timelines, and how we shape our reality?
This is a 3-hour question. So they talk a lot about the nature of time and saying that it's really a marker for frequency to find an event, that it doesn't really exist in the higher dimensions, but it is a construct of our current dimensional reality. So we needed the illusion of time, the progression of time, so that we could explore the lower resonances, the lower frequencies, without continually going through the death cycle. Because if we would have a lower thought and it was immediately manifest, that would be it, and we'd have to start all over. So we have this illusion of time that gives us an opportunity to alter our frequency before it's physically manifested. And once we've upped our frequency, we're no longer a match for that lower vibrational experience. And the way that time truly exists, they say, is that it's all concurrent. Past, present, and future are one. And they always give the image of a giant sphere. And on the surface of the sphere are an infinite number of dots. Those are all now moments. And every now moment is built upon an agreed upon set of circumstances for the collective's experience and then your personal experience. And that creates the base frequency that you build your now moment on. That's how you would find the marker for a time event. And really, we can move to any dot on that sphere that we want as we shift our resonance, as we shift our consciousness. But most of the time, we make small incremental shifts. So we choose a dot that's right next to the dot that we're standing on. And we string these together, and it gives us the illusion of a timeline. But they say we can radically shift our perspective and go to a now moment where the base frequency is radically different and have that experience as our next moment. And that's really what we call a miracle when things so radically shift, when we radically alter the story that we've been telling ourselves, the belief system that we've been holding on to. And this is where you see people oftentimes having a near-death experience and coming back with a completely different perspective of reality. And they may have immediate remission of an illness after they have that near-death experience, or their life may radically change because their belief systems have radically changed. And we have the opportunity to explore absolutely any frequency that we want. We just have to align ourselves to the specific frequency, the base frequency of the experience. And when we do that, we can radically change the world that we're experiencing. Now, it may be that the person next to you doesn't choose to go to that now moment where the frequency is so radically different, and that's okay. They can still be a part of your life. They may not be somebody that you talk to every day any longer. It may be you just catch up with them once every couple months, or once every couple years. But you can have a reality that in some ways is different from what the collective is having as well, because your personal story is different. So you can be thriving and experiencing a great deal of abundance where the story for the collective may be that, times are really tough. And that may be true for some people, but that doesn't have to be your direct experience of it either. So you can put yourself on a now moment where that is the expression for you.
Have you done this? I mean, because this is amazing information, and I love that picture of the dots and choosing. You can do something that's a little bit of a shift and a choice to change your timeline, choosing that other dot, but also the miraculous, where you can do this big, I mean, upheaval is not a great word, but to really change your reality. And you knowing this information and how to do it, have you used this? Do you have an example of this in your life?
I
And
mean,
what happened?
I think, it's for me, it's far more subtle. And sometimes I have beliefs that I'm really hanging on to. So being able to know it in theory, and sometimes with bigger issues, be able to shift some of those things, it's a little harder. But I certainly have seen smaller things manifest in my life, things that I intended. And it's always interesting to me, how things show up and being open to how they show up, because sometimes it may be exactly what I'm asking for, but it came in a way that I wasn't specific about. So to give you an example, way back in, I think 2004, 2003, 2004, I was working in an office environment, and I just decided that was it. I needed to do my channeling full time, and so I left, and I had this vision for myself. And right before I left, I decided I was going to buy a new car. And I had test driven some, and I saw myself in the car. And I had wanted to get a dog. I had wanted a yellow lab. And so I had this vision in my mind that that's really what I wanted. And then I ended up buying a different car, and I ended up leaving my job. And I went back to visit with my folks for a while, and they were out of town. And I was taking care of the family dog, and I realized that I was driving. They had just purchased a new car. I was driving the car that I had thought about, that I saw myself in, with a yellow lab in the car. But neither of those things were mine, but I got the thing that I had envisioned for myself. So now, I have a tiny little car today. I have a little convertible, but I got a very big dog. So I got a yellow lab for myself. He doesn't fit in the car, so I have been borrowing my folks' car for now until I decide what I wanted to do. And I'm driving around in this Jeep now with my yellow lab. So it's kind of funny how it all comes back full circle and the things that we think about. And really, it's about being open to how things look. I think that's also a big part of it.
Yeah, I can relate to that so much. I did the same thing many, I don't know, maybe it was 2 decades ago, where I was obsessed with this Lexus sports car. And I went into dealerships and I told them it has to be forest green, it has to have wood inside. And they said, "We really don't make those." I said, "No, I know." And sure enough, they called me in a week and said, "You're not going to believe this, but someone just drove one in and he wants to sell it." And because of a series of other things that influenced my life at the time, I ended up buying a Mini Cooper instead. So I actually brought in what I wanted, but for various reasons, it wasn't going to serve me. And it was a really interesting exercise. And I honor that whole time. Like, I respect that I was still able to bring something that big and that unique, but that I had to make a different choice at the same time. So I could really relate to what you're saying.
For years, the guides would give an example to people about wanting a new television set and not being focused on the money to get the television set, that it could come from another way, that maybe somebody was moving and they wanted to gift you with the TV, or you won a raffle or something like that. And I would channel that over and over for years at the very beginning. And then when it came time for me to need a new TV, I had somebody, as I was looking for new TVs, they said, "Hey, I have this brand new TV and I'm moving and I don't think I want to take it with me. Would you like to have it?" So that manifested after I talked about it so much through the channeling with the peas and in a way that they had illustrated. So there are a lot of little things like that, and I'm pretty good at manifesting the things that I want when I make a decision. And to be honest, a lot of times I don't decide that I know that there is more that I can create if I consciously focus. Just like everybody else, I get lost in what's happening through the day. But when I actually do sit down and make some vibrational decisions, things tend to show up pretty quickly.
That is so key what you're saying. I know we have to choose. I know we have to invest some action. But that decision, I think, is what sparks manifestation. And as somebody who's a 2-4 generator in human design, my thing is to ride the emotional wave till I know. And that can be like, feeling I'm in the middle of the ocean until there's clarity. I don't love that about my human design. I honor it, but I know once I decide, things go quickly. So I think that's very key what you're saying, stepping into alignment with an avenue, with a vibration for something.
Yeah, because I think a lot of times we just react. We don't really take the time to stop and make a conscious decision. And I'm guilty of that myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And what are the Pleiadians saying right now about us, about the role of the star seeds and the light workers during what feels like a very pivotal evolution, a moment in humanity and Earth.
They say it's really important for us to do just what I was talking about, to make some decisions about how we want to feel in every single moment, that we have a practice that we keep coming back to, that we check in to see where we're vibrating. Is it in alignment with the frequency that we want to see manifest? And if not, then we need to make course corrections so that we start becoming aware of subtle energy more and more, and that we start consciously creating our reality instead of reacting to everything that's outside of us. And it's really shifting that perspective to see that everything starts first with the internal, and everything we experience in the external is just a reflection of that internal. I think it's very easy to kind of get caught up in things and just react without really being conscious of the frequencies we want to hold,
Yeah.
especially with all the craziness and the world theater, shall we say?
Yes, the global stage. I would agree with you. And I really like that reminder, not react, but actually create, right? That's powerful. reminder. Well, folks, a quick pause here before we start the channeling portion of the show. I want to invite you a little deeper into this work. I've got something special for you, and you can gain access for free to a Starseed report and video. Debbie Solaris and I got together, as you know, the amazing galactic historian, and put together all these different species so you can learn your galactic ancestry, your lineage, and your origins. Go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed. It's Debbie with an I, Dachinger with a C, DebbiDachinger.com/starseed. This show is sponsored by Dr. Dane here and Access Consciousness. They do energy work out into the world. If you'd like to become a facilitator or take one of their classes, go to Dr. Dane here, HEER.com. And if you're ready for some profound transformation, I have monthly offerings for you. You can join any time for the next month, the next one that's coming up. They are galactic shamanic activations and healings. They're about 75 to 90 minutes. People join from all over the world on Zoom. And these are very powerful clearings. If you've ever experienced before, I know there's galactic activations and then there's shamanic healings, but in my world, I combine the two of them and have these beautiful luminous beings work through me for you. I'd love to work with you as well. So come to debbiedashinger.com/healing to register. It's the same link every month. All of these links are going to be below in the show description and the show notes. I am also speaking on the Adventure of a Lifetime celebrity cruise to the Mediterranean. Indeed, we have the most incredible presenters. We are going to Greece and to Turkey, March 2026. Super excited. Go to Mystery School at Sea. That's SEA, mysteryschoolatsea.com. And when it comes to referral, of course, please click on my name, Debbie Dashinger. I can't wait to work with you. Everything's included, the presentations, the food, your cabin, etc. And Wendy Kennedy here with us today is going to be channeling on stage and offering also a workshop at the West Virginia Channel Panel in November. You can get your tickets and we'll talk more about that at the end. You can go to debbiedashinger.com/channel panel. And if our conversation today is sparking something in you, share it with just one person who will benefit. Your support by subscribing, commenting, and sharing helps us reach way more star seeds and light workers around the globe. And so with that, I go back to the amazing Wendy Kennedy. And if it is okay with you, could we shift into the channeling right now?
Yes. So for those who haven't experienced the Pleiadians before, just to let you know who they are a collective of about 2,500 beings of light. They don't have physical form and they align with the star Alcyone. And they work with tone and sound, which is why their dialect is different than my own. It's really not any one particular dialect, it's just tones and sounds that resonate with you at a cellular level. So in addition to getting the information, it's as if you're getting a healing as well today.
Thank you,
So,
Wendy.
I'll get out of the way and let them come in.
Beautiful.
Yes, hello, dears. This is the Ninth Dimensional Pleiadian Collective, and it is a pleasure and an honor to have the opportunity to connect with you. So, we are honored to be witness to the extraordinary growth and development that you are going through at this time. You are not always able to see your progress as you're in the midst of it, but you all are really integrating quite a lot in a very, very short amount of time. This is a very special period you're in. It's a nexus point where you are integrating many, many lifetimes of unintegrated, or shall we say, areas where you were still holding judgment in other lifetimes, that you are repeating those patterns here and now, trying to come at it from a different angle to actually integrate, to let go of judgment so that you can elevate your frequency. So Now, more than any other time on this planet, you have access to these records, and they are mirrors for what you are currently going through. They're amplifiers of the energy so that as you have an experience, maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, what you've created for yourself is maybe a 2 or 3. It's not high drama, but it may feel a bit more dramatic within your body. That's to get your attention. To pay attention. You don't have a lot to kind of unravel in your manifestation. You haven't created a big problem for yourself. It's rather minor, but it does get your attention so that you can address it to say, oh, I'm running this limiting belief about myself, or there may be a higher way of expressing this desire. And this makes your ability to integrate with this added knowledge and information a lot faster and easier because it's there and perceivable. We always say drama happens to get your attention when you're not paying attention. So, as you're focusing on something that you'd like to create and you're aware of what is coming up throughout your day, you can integrate, you can release judgments much faster without the high drama. So this is just something that we want to bring to your attention as you're going. As Wendy mentioned, what is it that we see for you and what are we focused on here? It's about you really becoming empowered and deciding how you want to feel every single moment of your day. And you directing your consciousness to stay in the present and to be able to embody what we would say is your full divine light. All right, so that you can create a higher resonant reality. And you're getting there piece by piece. But some of you may feel a little stuck right now. You might feel like you're taking one step forward, two steps back, and that's okay. You actually are making progress. You just can't always see it. Think about an airplane taking off on a rainy day. The plane is ascending, but you haven't broken through the clouds just yet. But you've gone up in frequency or in elevation in the case of the airplane, and then you break through the clouds, and it seems like a completely different day once you get to the other side. So you're making progress. You may not have had that breakthrough just yet. So keep doing, the basics where you're checking in. Where am I vibrating? How do I feel? What emotions are coming up? What's the quality of thought? And is that in alignment with what it is that you would like to see? And if not, you don't have to beat yourself up because you're not in that higher resonance. You don't have to work at it. All you have to do is realign yourself. Put yourself in your heart center. Think of something that makes you smile. Make a vibrational selection. I'd like to feel peace. I'd like to feel confidence. What would that feel like in my body? And then imagine it. Whether you say, I am peaceful, I am confident, or whether you say, I wonder what it would feel like to be, fill in the blank, that will allow you to be in resonance with the frequency. And that's what you're looking for. You're pulsing it out, and what you pulse out gets reflected back as your reality.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. You mentioned at the beginning just now that for some of us, you brought in the word past lives. And I'm really curious if there is anything right now we need to know about Lemuria and Atlantis to help navigate these times.
Well, Lemuria is coming up more and more into your consciousness. You're going to hear over the course of the next year and a half it coming up more and more because you're finally in a vibrational state to receive the information, to remember. So, this was a game of descension and reascension. So, the highest civilization that you've had on your planet was Lemuria, and then you kind of stepped down in frequency, and then Atlantis came, and then Atlantis fell, and then you kept going down in frequency. So now, as you're healing and you're coming back up, you've got to kind of clean out those lower frequencies first before you can get high enough to start accessing the records of the higher civilizations on your planet. And this is why, up until now, you all didn't have a huge memory of Lemuria. Most of you felt more connected and called to Atlantis. Those were some of your more recent experiences. And there was healing that had to be done around that and the fall of that civilization. A lot of the grief, a lot of the pain, a lot of the hardship that was experienced as it fell, but also the aftermath of that. Some of you survived that, and the grief of losing an entire civilization and the planetary wisdom that was being held by that civilization. It brought overwhelming grief to those of you who survived Atlantis. So you've had to process through that, and you're just coming out on the other side where you're able to access more information about Lemuria. And it is very needed at this time, because Lemuria is really about the divine feminine and being able to hold that energy of the divine feminine. And that's really about working with the receptive qualities, about the internal qualities, about your ability to call in, to receive. All of you right now are very focused on the external and the doing, because you've been socially conditioned that way. But now you're coming back online to start looking to the inside, to receive energy, to allow it to flow in, to call things to you instead of going out and hunting for it. That you are working in a new way, and that will help you to create better balance. First, you've got to work with the divine feminine, and then you'll start to work with more of the divine masculine. Right now, you're working with the lower aspects of both. In a linear perceived reality, the feminine always comes first. In the higher realms, both things happen concurrently. But here where you are, it is always first a feminine expression and then a masculine expression. And that means an internal generation of energy first, and then it gets pulsed out, moved into the masculine. And then once you're in the external, you're observing, you're moving back into the feminine. And then you find a frequency that is a vibrational match for what you'd like to experience. You step towards it, you move back into the masculine, and you are in a constant loop between the internal, the external, the feminine, and the masculine. And so this is what you're bringing back online. This is the key to manifestation. And the Lemurians understood this. And they were masterful at the things that they were able to create and their ability to create and generate in harmony with nature. And this is also the key element that you're bringing back online. In terms of Atlantis, there was, as you descended into some of the lower aspects of Atlantis, there was some manipulation of nature that wasn't so great. It's what you're still seeing in today's reality. But in the high civilizations, we're talking 150,000 years ago in Atlantis, they had a greater understanding of how to work with the resonance of Mother Earth in a harmonious way to support all life on the planet. And you're going through this ascension process so you can take stewardship of the planet once again, so that you can be caregivers for Mother Earth and for all life that exists upon her.
Wow, that's so interesting to me. And I love this principle of the Lemurians and the divine feminine and calling to oneself. And also, this feels very shamanic to me. When you talk about how the Lemurians understood to work in harmony with nature, and to have nature work for us, to have respect for nature, but also what the Atlanteans did when they started to manipulate nature and how much it reflects right now. I find that very interesting, the parallel also to the indigenous people and the shamanic folks who understand this and have always understood this. I think they come from your planetary system, don't they, the indigenous people originally?
Many, yes, not all. There are several different star systems who kind of lent their energy to some of the Aboriginal people. But yes, the Pleiades was here. Beings from the Pleiades star system, we shared our knowledge, our wisdom. And there are still some from Sirius and Orion who hold, shall we say, sway with some of the more original peoples, the Aboriginal peoples. And you have all of this information encoded within you. But again, you've got to deal with your own personal stuff on a day-to-day level in order to elevate your frequency so that you can start accessing more of the records, more of the information. And that's coming because you all, as we said here at the very beginning, you're doing a lot of fine work. Things are being integrated very, very rapidly. What you will do in the span of a month or two used to take you several lifetimes to integrate. That's just how fast the development is because there's so much energy that you have access to as you're moving through this sector of space, which is rich in photonic energy. There are light particles, information that's supporting the elevation of your frequency, but also because this is the nexus point. This is the point as you move through space that you are meant to integrate, to see, have access to all of these lifetimes.
We're talking about portals. I'm switching a little bit here. Portals and other dimensions. What other dimensional reality does somebody go into when they go through the Bermuda Triangle? Is there one endpoint or are there many?
There are many because a lot of it is very unstable. Some of the Bermuda Triangle is, well, a lot of it is caused by crystals that are unstable in from Atlantis. As Atlantis fell, these crystals fell out of proper alignment. And so what was once stable in the original civilization has become unstable. That's why sometimes people pass through, sometimes they don't. So they can go to different dimensional ranges. It just depends on a couple of different things, actually, because even something as seemingly random as going into another dimension, you think, oh, that just is something that happens to you. It's not something that the soul would decide to have that kind of experience, but it actually is a soul choice. It's usually written in the blueprint that the soul wants to have that kind of experience. And so it will seem like an accident that someone goes into the Bermuda Triangle or they disappear. But that's also part of the soul blueprint. It's what they want to explore. It helps them to shift radically, be pulled out of, plucked out of their current box of reality and expand their perspective. A lot of times they go to the six-dimensional level. That seems to be one of the anchor points that people tend to go to. Occasionally they can go up higher. Sometimes they stay within your dimensional range, but they go to an alternative version of reality, another now moment that your consciousness was not previously standing on. And the vibrational essence of, say, what the collective created for themselves, maybe they had a different outcome to one of your world wars. And so there was a different power structure because a different country won the war and things branched off. So they may shift into that kind of experience as well, where the base frequency is different, but the vibrational range that they're the level of consciousness that they're experiencing is the same.
Oh,
The
that's amazing.
density is the same.
Is that what happened then with the Philadelphia experiment when it, quote unquote, went wrong because they shut it down in the middle of the experiment in the ship? And some, I believe two of the military men ended up from the 1940s all of a sudden in the 1980s and somehow connected with Montauk, Long Island, New York. Is that part of what happened? Because that was the government in conjunction with the Greys, right? Using very advanced technology. And was that a soul choice that
Yes.
those really?
It's never an accident. So that can be part of the blueprint. You may write it in as, this may come up and am I open to that? Yeah, we'll go this route if I'm in vibrational alignment. But absolutely, yes, that is always a soul choice. Everything that you do, every experience you have is a soul choice. Otherwise, you'd be on a different now moment. So that's why when you create situations or scenarios that seem like challenges to yourself, we always say, look at it as a gift, a blessing, if you will. What piece of information is in there for you. There's always a gift in there. It shows you how, most of the time, if it's a challenge, how you are suppressing your divine light, that there's some limiting belief that you're holding, and it's an opportunity to perceive that there is another level of consciousness to hold, because the challenge and the solution are created at the same time. They just exist in different vibrational ranges. So think about it this way. The coin is generated, but you've got two sides to it. But those two sides just happen to be different vibrational ranges that you can experience. There's either that happening in every given moment, that there is the universe is showing how you're expressing or suppressing divine light. All right, there's a challenge you need to shift. Or more often when you're in flow, there's nothing that's stopping you. You are not stopping to think about the moment. You're just going on to the next one. But there also may be a skill, gift, or ability that this challenge is presenting you with, the ability to master shifting your frequency, holding a resonance. And so that in itself is a gift. Shifting to another now moment into the future, who you connect with in those moments, bringing that awareness that time is an illusion, that you can move from moment to moment in a breath, that is something that the soul will choose to help others who are on the receiving end to have the ability to connect with those beings who've shifted in time. It shifts their perspective of reality, but also for those that went through that experience, to see that they are whole and complete still, and it will radically alter their perception of reality. All that information goes into the collective consciousness, and it doesn't take a majority of you to start doing these kinds of things to radically shift the collective. It takes a very small number of you, because once you start to put that into collective consciousness, people start tapping into it. It's like a manual on how to do something. The growth is exponential. So it happens very rapidly, that more and more people get this, and they start shifting and aligning with that information. You're seeing that happen now, that people are waking up at an exponential rate, that there are more and more people who are questioning their true origins, the origins for themselves as a spark of the divine, but also their connection to the stellar realms and those that are part of their galactic family, their universal family.
Yes.
And so it picks up speed.
Which is beautiful. I think we're all ready for the speed. And thank you for that explanation. I want to switch to Antarctica, which I think for many of us is a fascinating, mysterious place. I know there were times of heat wave as well as loss of sunlight by degrees. Is there a craft? Is there an ark or a city that's actually buried under the ice in Antarctica? What is happening there?
There's a lot happening there. So you've got a couple of different things going on. So you do have beings that are kind of in the inner earth section. All right. So you think of Mount Shasta and the Lemurians that are residing there in Telos. There's something similar happening at this point, it's a blend of humanity and ETs that are there. But then you also have under the ice, you have craft, and there are different levels and layers of this, different ages of these relics, if you will. So there are some that have been there for about 100,000 years, some that have been there for about 25,000 years, 26,000 years, somewhere in that ballpark. So there are different things that are there. There is, in essence, a city that is there, the ruins of a city. And then you also, yes, have what we would call motherships that are there. They're very old and very large. And then you have, those are inactive. And then you have some that are a bit more active. And there's a lot of life there as well, where you've got a lot of ET activity under the ocean. They have set up bases down there because you all don't go down there very often. They take advantage of some of the ley lines around the planet at different longitudes and latitudes. They take advantage of the natural flow of energy, and so they will set up bases around the world, oftentimes submerged, again, because you're not down at those depths. And then sometimes just above the land, out of resonance with your optic nerves so that you don't always see what is right there. They use cloaking devices and such, but they are able to connect with the energetic lines of the earth there.
Is there an arc that's gearing up to come out of East Antarctica?
We're not quite sure how that's going to play out because that gets rolled into disclosure. So there are different factions who are working with your world governments to bring disclosure about. Those that are more, say, on the positive end of the scale, who really want to honor humanity, who don't want to generate more fear in humanity. We've been trying to work with your governments, and there is a lot of disagreement on the other side, all right, about how all of this should play out. There are some beings who are impatient, who are done with waiting for those in power. They're working at an individual level right now, but they're impatient and want to work with you collectively because they also want to interact with you because you've got a tremendous amount of creativity and ingenuity. You have a lot of information for them in terms of the genetic material that you contain, the records that are easily accessible when it comes to accessing DNA, you also gain access to records. And these records are a little harder for some of these species to access because not all species are able to ignite the creator spark in the way that humanity is able to do that. And so for them, it's a little harder for them to see their history, to find alternative means. And also, because you've got genetic material from thousands of worlds here, you have along with that genetic material, a wide range of emotional, a wide range of records and kind of think about how-to manuals, how species in different parts of the system have worked through the very issues that you're trying to integrate right now. And not all these species have access to that. So this is a grand experiment. This is very, very special. And so they're very anxious to work with you. Others want to take a bit more of a hands-off approach. They're still waiting for you to come up enough. And this is why we've said before that there is a very strong probability in the summer of 2026 for you to have some level of disclosure because some of these beings are just done waiting. So when you ask about this arc coming up, that is a game changer. What really is moving a lot of things along are the new technological developments that you all are making in terms of archaeology. You're seeing it with Egypt and the new radar or the new uses of radar and data, how you're finding unique ways of interpreting what's already been there. And this is allowing you to step out of that control mechanism. Those who said, well, you've got to have a permit, you've got to do it this way, you've got to do it that way. You're stepping out of that control mechanism and you're making these discoveries. And so that growth in terms of the unfoldment of information, the archaeological discoveries you're going to make, those are going to unfold very, very rapidly. What you're talking about is a part of that. And we're not quite sure just yet what time frame that's going to fall in. It's still pretty strong for summer 2026. It could push into 2027. Think about your own governments when you've got a deadline for something and then the talks and the negotiations are still going on and that gets pushed back just a little bit. So that's what's happening here, but we don't see it going any further at the very latest, 28. So within 2 years, really. At the very, very latest, we see this happening because you as a collective are making the decision that you want to know your true roots, you want the truth. And so it will be.
Is when you mentioned that there is a city, an ancient city buried there, is that Atlantis? Is that the Atlantis civilization buried there, or is it another ancient city?
It's another ancient city. Atlantis was very large. It wasn't just in a localized area. There, it had branched out and went many, many different locations. Some of this is it's not Atlantis, it's not Lemuria, it's ET based. So this goes back closer to the time of Lemuria, some of this about 400,000 years ago, and they shared the planet with other ETs. ETs came and went. So at that high level of Lemuria, they remembered that they were part of a galactic community, and they actually shared the planet with other beings from different star systems. Earth, in its very early origins, was kind of a vacation spot. And the Lyrans loved to come to Earth, and many of the first Lemurians were Lyran. Because it was a getaway, it was on the far reaches of the galaxy, and so it was a beautiful place. It was a beautiful planet, and filled with new adventures.
I love this. Earth as a resort, as a
Yes, this was.
destination.
Yes, it was before it was deemed a location for a grand experiment, and once that happened, it was more of a quarantine zone that there were only so many different species who could come in and access the planet without interrupting the natural progression of the planet itself. There had to be some soul contracts, karmic things going on. So the access was limited at that point.
Got it. And Noah's Ark, was it actually an ark and a giant ship, or was it an advanced spacecraft?
Spacecraft. And you're talking about DNA, not literal animals on a ship. Well, there were some, but it's about DNA. It was about being a DNA bank.
Are there space arks that are located in the Ukraine, buried in the sand in the Ukraine and Russia?
Not so much DNA arcs. But there are a lot of remnants of these ancient civilizations. Ukraine has a lot of portals that allow access to multidimensional destinations. That's part of the reason why there's so much going on there. That's also part of the reason why some of the darker energies are there, because they know about and utilize these vortices and energetic centers that have been there for millennia. And there are a lot of ancient relics there, period, in both of those locations.
Very interesting, and what I had wondered about considering the war over the land. Okay, thank you for that. So interesting. I'm going to switch to the ant beings who live subterranean in Earth and a very advanced species. In the Hopi language, Hopi Indians, the word Anu means ant. Naki means friends. So Anunnaki, of course, strangely familiar and similar to the beings, the Anunnaki. Are the ant beings the Anunnakis?
Well, it's a generalized term, and it was used originally for many different species. So the answer is yes and no. So yes, in a sense, there were very positive beings who were here and interacting, but there were also some that were a little more nefarious who waited until the fall of Atlantis to kind of step in. Some of them came from Mars. They were already living on Mars, and the Atlanteans were also in communication with some of these beings at that time. And once Atlantis fell, they took the opportunity to kind of step in to be able to manipulate things in a way to their benefit. So they've kind of fallen under that label as well. This is also why it's so confusing for you all, because you say, well, are the Anunnaki good or are they bad? So think about it this way, like a label of earthlings. All right. Are all earthlings good? No. Are all earthlings bad? No. So it's a bit of a more generic term, and there are subsets in there. So the ant people would be one of those subsets.
That's very interesting. Yes, of course, what you're saying, because there was the Sumerian Anunnaki, and there was an Egyptian pharaoh in 13 something, I think it is BC. And when you look at the sculpture of him, he has this incredible elongated skull and very ant-like looking eyes. And then I know in many cultures around the world, like the Zulus, for instance, will get dressed up with antenna, much like ant beings. And of course, the Hopi celebrate them because they say, I don't even think it's mythology in their tradition, that the ant beings save them during cataclysms here on Earth. Would you weigh in on that?
Yeah, so a lot of times you just write things off as being metaphorical, all right? But in truth, they actually look different. Same thing with some of the felines, some of the aquatics, some of the bird people. All right, they actually look that way. The Pleiades system itself is quite rich and diverse with different species, more ant-like, some of them. A lot of the bird species will come from the Pleiades system, humanoids as well. There are also some reptilians who come from the Pleiades. But the way that you all have it wired, reptilians are bad. Not necessarily. Some of them are quite loving and quite kind. So you've got to be open to listen to your own heart and use your own discernment as you start to connect with some of these beings. But yes, these ant people that you're referring to were Pleiadian in nature. And in some other systems, you're looking at a lot of the Sirian energy in Egypt, a lot of that's coming from that system. All right, not so much the Pleiades. But remember, a lot of the sacred sites that you have, and you might say, oh, well, they seem to be beings who feel like they're connected with Orion or Sirius or Pleiades. A lot of the sacred sites that were used throughout time, it may have originally been a site that the Pleiadians used, but then as they kind of decided to go off in another direction, another species would step forward and use that location, use the energetic centers. And you see this today where you have temples that were built on previous temples because the energetics of the site, the sacredness of the land. And we were talking before about the latitude and longitude, and these species understand them that they can harness energy by being on specific points. And so when somebody else steps off that land, they say, oh, well, that might be a good place to go. So that's why also you have sometimes a mix of things, and it can be very confusing for you all. You can't quite figure it all out. You can't figure out the time frame because once you go to your ancient past, well, frankly, even 5,000 years ago, anything beyond that, it's a bit muddy. One thing could be 5,000, another 15,000. That's a lot of time really to pass. But for you, it can kind of get all lumped together and you can't parse it out. You can't see the linear progression of that.
You know, when you're talking about species, I don't think I've ever asked anybody this question. I'm curious about how many ET human hybrid species there are. So I'll narrow this down because that's probably a huge question. However, there's the Yayel, there is the Sasani, but I'm talking about a crossbreed between another species and humans, and I know we're a genetic soup to start with, but how many of us different types of human ET hybrids are there out there?
Well, let's just say this. There are about 52 different hybrid projects going on right now that are directly connected to Earth. There are many more out in the galaxy where you have humanoids, beings who are very closely related to current humans, where there are hybrid projects going on there as well. So there are many, many more hybrid projects on your planet that have nothing to do with the human species. There are beings who are here working with your dolphins, your whales, your other aquatic life, your insects, because their species may have donated that genetic material, and as they work with that genetic material, they have access to the records. So it's sometimes a sideways into the records of the collective of humanity. So there are many, many species who are here performing hybrid projects that don't involve humans. A lot of that is happening under your oceans or in your oceans under the sea. In terms of the different species, it's well into the hundreds, because one project might have several different species on it. So it's quite vast, and you at the soul level will agree to this. And we know there are many people who have experienced abductions and have remembrances of it that were not quite positive. Still, at the soul level, there is a part of you that agreed to it. Otherwise, it would not be happening. Usually, what happens is that at the soul level, you say, well, I'm going down to Earth. I'm not going to remember it. I want to help the species out. Maybe you were a part of that species, another aspect of you. And so you think, well, I'm not going to remember. It'll be fine. Go ahead, whatever. But as you get into the game and you're playing it and you're increasing your consciousness, you realize, you begin to notice that, oh, I'm having memories of this, and you don't remember the full picture, the desire to be of service. You just remember the trauma from it. That's how you framed it, and it seems scary to you. Sometimes we liken it to you having a surprise party. And you walk into your house and all your friends jump out and scream at you. In that first moment, you jump back because you find it scary. If that's where it ended, that's what most of you, when you have traumatic experiences about this abduction, that's where the connection ends. The trauma happens, you don't process all the way through it, and so you shut it off and hold on to the trauma. But as with the surprise party, the lights go on, you recognize, oh, it's my friends, they're here. And we're going to have a good time together. And it may be that you are sharing some DNA. There's a part of you that says, all right, there's no problem here. Go ahead and take the sample. But you're getting lost in the trauma. And if you were to move through that, you could connect more with the memories and the knowledge that you wanted to be of service, and this is how and why. So that's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but yes, there are a lot of hybrid projects going on.
Absolutely. Well, before we switch into doing the activation and the code around trust, I just personally want to express my deep love and gratitude to you for indulging my ever ongoing curiosity and for providing a platform for me and everybody watching and listening. You are so beyond AI, Wikipedia, everything we have here that at times feels wonderful but limited. And the fact that I can ask you all these questions and you are so at the ready with this information and wisdom, I can't tell you how much it means to me. And I just needed to share with you before we move on how I feel about that and how much I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you as well, dear. So thank you.
And now, folks, the peas are going to take us through an activation, and I'm going to pull up this very beautiful screen. So, for those of you watching on YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, you can see the code in this other language from the Pleiadians about trust. I trust in myself and in the divine order of the universe.
So, first, we want to talk here very briefly about the language of light and what it is. So, it is a source language, and it is comprised of light, sound, sacred geometry, and information. So, there are multiple carrier waves that you're exposed to all at once in the words that are spoken or the symbols that you see on the page. And it's a bit like somebody reading a book to you, or you reading the book and seeing the words on the page. Some of you are more auditory, some of you are more visual. It's just a different way for you to get the information. And what the code is helping you to do, or the activation is helping you to do, is to attune your own frequency. So it's providing you with a reference point that you can then move to. It's a bit like somebody asking you to sing the note of C. If you don't have perfect pitch, it can be hard to reproduce that frequency. But if somebody plays the note on the piano, you say, "Oh, that note, no problem. I can reproduce that. I can sing that note." And so you do. So this is what it's helping you to do, is to recalibrate yourself to that frequency. We think right now it's very important that you all work with trust, trusting in yourselves. As you trust in yourself, it doesn't really matter what anybody outside of you is doing, because you will have an awareness of whether something is in alignment with your desired frequency expression or not. So if somebody isn't being truthful, you'll have an awareness of, "Not so sure about that. I'm not sure I want to engage with that. That's not necessarily a match for me. I'm going to go off in this direction." So you don't have to worry so much about what others are doing. It's about you learning to trust you and connecting with things that are a match for you, and knowing that you are always in the right place at the right time. It can be no other way, or you'd be on a different dot. You'd be on a different one of those now moments. So you're exactly where you're supposed to be, having exactly the experience that you were meant to have. All right. So we're going to get out of the way and we'll see where we go. Take a nice deep breath. Indora Manesia del Marare, when I better get a tidy, when I'm an Asia, that a little bit of the Louisa, the door, a bit of the Bidjata, Hasakotore, Imanesi, the Arthur Kuri, Manakatari, Minimidjata, Hasana Arakoturi, Manakati, Bidjata, Isa Akada, Ara Ibidjata, Alibidjata, Hisa Akade. All right, take another nice deep breath. And as you're ready, you can bring your presence back to the room. So we call these galactic light codes. And the reason we do that is, as you may have noticed, as the activation happened, the energy shifted periodically. And that's because there are many, many different beings from different star systems who will come in the activation. And as they are connecting, they are sharing their information, their wisdom, as to how that species worked through the very issue that you are seeking to integrate here and now. So you don't have to know who they all are, because sometimes it's hundreds of beings blending their energy together at once. So just know that you got exactly what you needed to get in this moment. Now, typically, what we recommend is that you work with it 3 times a day for 3 days in a row. That's a good amount of time to get you acquainted, aware of the subtle energies, so you can recognize them. It's just kind of a recommendation. There's no hard rules here. But you know what we're trying to help you to learn to do is to recognize subtle energy, because once you know how to read subtle energy, the world, the universe opens up to you. All right.
Beautiful. Yes. And so 3 times a day for 3 days, that is super doable. And that was very gorgeous. I could really feel that. I feel it in different parts of my body too, at different times and different things happening. Very powerful indeed. And I love this subject of trust. I think it is so appropriate right now for individuals and for the collective and for where we're headed, because certainly I would like to be on the timeline you talked about, which is summer of 2026, 2027, latest 2028, But these unprecedented things starting to happen, I am very ready for all of it. Thank you.
It is our pleasure. Feel free to connect with us directly. You don't need Wendy, just ground, heart, center, ask your question and listen. And until we hear from you, we are watching, we are waiting, and we are sending many, many well wishes.
Wow, what a special way to spend time. Really. Ah, Wendy, what a service. What a service you give. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
It's extraordinary. I want people to know where they can find you next. I know you'll be at the West Virginia Channel Panel, but you're welcome to tell us any and all of the places you'll be.
Oh, well, thank you. So yes, the next live event is there in West Virginia, and then in February I will be in LA for the Conscious Life Expo. So those are the two things, and then not sure, something probably in April. We're still trying to work all of that out as well.
All right. And you, do you still have offerings online for groups?
I do. So we do have our monthly membership where we work with the galactic light codes, what you just experienced. The guides kind of see what energy everybody needs, and then based on that, they give me a code. And there's a short channeling and affirmations meditation that goes along with all of that. And then once a month, I also do a group session, our Pleiadian perspectives. So you'll find more information on those things. Also, coming up on Saturday, I have a special benefit event. It's called Accessing Galactic Wisdom, and that 100% of the proceeds for the live event go to Aloha in Action.
Lovely. Lovely. As always, such an honor, pleasure for me to spend time with you and with the nine Ps, the ninth dimensional Pleiadians. They really deliver. You really deliver. And I want to give out your website is higherfrequencies.net. And then if you would like to hear Wendy speak, channel also offer a workshop at the Channel Panel West Virginia. It's this November. It's the 14th through the 16th. And literally the world's most respected channelers are going to be there in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And this is a weekend of guidance and of workshops, of community. Some of my great friends will be there. It's not to be missed. Darrell Anka and Bashar, Rob Gauthier, Jamie Price, Vita Kukulhoff, Wendy herself, Pamela Arlen, and Marilyn Harper. They've all mostly been on the show recently, so you've experienced their magnificence. Get your tickets. Go to debbiedashinger.com/channelpanel. Thank you, Wendy, so much.
Oh, thank you, Debbie, and thank you for all that you do.
Pleasure. And I end today's show with this quote about Wendy and the Pleiadians, because they remind us every thought, every choice, every vibration is a brushstroke on the canvas of our collective future. So when we raise our frequency and claim our multidimensional nature, we not only transform ourselves, we transform the destiny of humanity. Remember, stay in choice and decision and choose your highest, because as she shared in the beginning, there really are miracles available for us. This has been Dare to Dream podcast for curious souls connecting with extraterrestrial life, higher dimensions, and ancient shamanic wisdom. Subscribe to this number one transformational conversation. Leave a comment and share. Next week on the podcast, I'm speaking with Melissa Fike, who is a multidimensional channel and works with the Galactic Akashic Records. Thank you so much for joining us today on Dare to Dream.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book. And her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashner, your number one transformation conversation.